Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Moncrief on News Talk.
In 1811, a Royal Navy frigate called the HMS Saldanha sank off the coast of County Donegal, along with 253 sailors. It was said at the time that only the captain's parrot survived. But shifting sands may have revealed it. The ship, that is, not the parish. John O'Raw is a local archaeologist. Good afternoon, John.
Afternoon, Sean.
Tell us something of the story and the circumstances in which it sank in the first place.
So I'm figuring you're probably of a similar age to myself. For people of our age, we've only known relative peace in Europe. But that's an exceptional, for boomers, that's exceptional. Post-World War II is a time of peace that we've never really seen in 1,000 years. There's been brief interludes of peace. Armed conflict, unfortunately, is normal for these shores. And, for instance, in the start of the 1800s, the Napoleonic Wars, the approaches to Europe were being blockaded by the English. The French were blockading the ports from the English using them. It was war all over. And places like Bantry Bay, Lough Swilly, they were absolutely ideal targets for invasion by the back door. Also for patrolling, you've got Haulbowline, which has been used for centuries in Cork, and Lough Swilly was the best deep water port at the time along the north coast. So this was a major base for the squadron that patrolled the northern approaches to the UK into Europe.
So that's what the ship was doing. And now it was a frigate. It was armed to the teeth, this thing. There was so many other cannons and the like on board.
Oh, absolutely. And when it says something like a 36-gun frigate, that just tells you its rating. It has nothing to do with the number of guns that were actually on board. So they'll have had big 18-pounder cannon with a long range, probably effective up to about a mile. And then they'll have had huge smashers up on the deck, carronades. So double the size of a cannonball, very short range, but at close quarters, absolutely lethal and armed to the teeth. Everybody fought. Literally, the ship's cook got up with a sword when there was a boarding action going on.
Now, the day and the night it sank, I've read some reports saying there was a hurricane that night. Was it a hurricane or was it just a very severe storm?
When a mariner says a hurricane or a true hurricane, they're actually being quite precise. So if you go back over old naval records, they're quite amazing. For every vessel that was afloat, they were keeping your ship's log. I can look back now at an entry once per hour for the entire lifetime of that ship's operation, and I can tell you what they were eating, which direction the wind was blowing from, the strength of that wind. And they weren't guessing. Their lives depended on them accurately representing all these things. What's absolutely amazing is that a couple of hundred years later, I can pull that information and I can tell exactly what happened to any vessel that survived. In the case of the Saldanha, she would have left Cove, where our own naval base is at the moment. She would have left there on the 19th of November. And that's where she would have last lodged a copy of her logs. So I have a day-to-day, hour-by-hour record of what the Saldanha was doing right up until the 19th.
My word, yeah. Now, obviously it sank. And what's been spotted now? Because from photographs, it almost looks like the spinal column of an animal or something.
So the design of those big vessels at the time was what we call frame and plank. So you have a big complicated frame that you build kind of in the middle. You plank the inside of that and you plank the outside of that. So incredibly strong, incredibly rigid, but yet flexible enough for heavy ocean. The things that you're looking at on those overhead photographs would be the frames. And those frames were made up of pieces called futtocks. Now, I've already said that we can get a lot of records from that time, but I can literally give you the dimensions of every piece of wood on a vessel of that class. This stuff is all recorded in Kew Gardens in London, and the National Maritime Museum folks in Greenwich are absolutely excellent for having even the scale drawings of every part of the ship, the shear drafts.
Okay.
You could rebuild the ship based on what we have.
Yeah, so do you know for certain that this is the Saldana?
Well, you had to ask that question, didn't you?
I'm sorry.
So the $64,000 question or whatever. I'm a scientist, unfortunately, so I'm going to say something terrible like is consistent with.
Mm.
So there's nothing there that tells us it's not, but to conclusively prove it is, that's going to take a lot more work. So in its favour, it's a big bit of wreck that's on the beach. So from the furthest southernmost point to the furthest northernmost point, probably about 13 or 14 metres, the curve that you see of beams from the southernmost point there to the end of the curve, that's 11 and a half metres. That's a big lump of a boat. Do you know, for a wooden-hulled vessel, that's a decent-sized boat. The Saldana itself would have been about a little bit under 150 feet long. So you've got 40 feet of 150 feet. We know from primary sources, so it's really important that we act as archaeologists the same way as you folks act like as journalists. You can't make stuff up and you can't guess. So we can act with primary sources. We can go back to the letters from people who saw it at the time that, again, are documented in the Admiralty records. And I can get exact quotes of what people saw the following morning. What I can tell you is that she broke in two, probably on the cliffs at Nuggalla. She drifted back to the beach in two pieces, and they were separated out that much that originally they thought it was two separate shipwrecks. We know that most of the wreck ended up in the south of the beach, so well away from where this debris is. This debris, something has been reported in this area a couple of times over the years, but it's never been properly documented. The shifting of sands in the 6 weeks, I suppose, from late January into early February, when we had all those easterlies, I think those shiftings of sands are phenomenally unusual. I don't know if I remember seeing conditions like that in my life.
Yeah. And I assume that you have to be sensitive, John, because 253 people died there.
Oh, so this is a war grave. So rather than even showing good judgment, there's legislation in place on all those kind of things. But we're used to coming across shipwrecks around Donegal, and quite often they can be fishing boats or other commercial vessels, and they're the predecessors of our friends and neighbours.
Mm.
Nobody dives on a vessel where lives were lost without showing absolute respect.
Yeah. John, we have to leave it there. Best of luck with your investigations. It'll be fascinating to find out what you discover. That's John O'Rourke there, a local archaeologist in Donegal.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.